Welcome back, folks. We're all the way up to episode 5 in our latest season of Mention and Dispatches. And while this season we are leaning a little heavy into talking with designers, we've also got some other industry things we're going to talk about a little bit this season. And to that end, I had reached out to our buddy Jason Matthews in advance of this season to say, hey, you know, we really ought to have a conversation about Gamma and wargaming, just because there's always, you know, the wargamers going, well, Gamma doesn't do anything for me. And the Gamma guys saying, and well, the wargamers never show up, so why do we care? And so we were going to have this conversation about Gamma. And then in the last, like, I don't know, 14 to 18 or so days, Gamma has renamed the organization, hired a COO, the executive director is resigning, one of the board members resigned because she wants to go do other stuff. They're having a special election to fill that board. So like, there's actual Gamma news about all of this also that was not intended when I said, hey, Jason, let's have a podcast about Gamma.
So I all true. 2 weeks ago, we wouldn't have, you know, it would have been an esoteric discussion. Right now, there's tons happening.
Yeah, there's actual newsworthiness to all of this. And because he loves to gripe about Gamma around Origins every year, we went ahead and brought Gary in because we needed, you know, some negative vibes for all of this. Right, Gary?
It's an honor to be here.
Gary is here largely because he is one of those voices that sort of looks at Gamma and says, well, what the hell are Wargamers supposed to be getting out of Gamma as a part of all of this?
That's not my question, Brant, in fairness. My question is actually, and I guess this is a question for Jason, is what exactly does Gamma do besides run Origins? I know the answer isn't nothing, but I think a lot of folks, including myself, are unclear as to the functions that Gamma performs, other than running Origins, which everybody knows.
So before Jason starts answering, just to let the audience know, Jason is a former board member of Gamma, and you've been a member for like a long damn time too, right? I mean, it's been a while.
I represented Fort Circle at Gamma, and they pretty much, since Fort Circle has existed, they've been a member. I've been attending functions for Gamma for forever. And like Aardwolf, I guess my interest in Gamma started because I found it dysfunctional, not because I was like rah-rah Gamma.
Those are two, three words that I never expected to hear together.
Yeah. So going backing up to Gary's point, now that, you know, hey, Jason's been around this for a while, because the Dragoons, we've been Gamma members for about a year now. We're coming up on our renewal here soon. But I've been to the Expo a couple of years, obviously been involved with Origins for a long time and got to know some of the Gamma folks when I lived in Columbus and, you know, worked on some research projects with them and stuff. But that was several regimes ago. Gary's question, I think, is a valid one for the folks that don't know. You know, they see Gamma runs Origins. They might know about the Expo, so the business trade show. But the other stuff Gamma has traditionally done, not necessarily the things that are on that 10-year roadmap that they released, but the other things that Gamma has purported to have done for the game industry over the years. What's on that list, though, Jason?
Well, before I address that directly, let me talk a little bit about Gamma history for a second, because while those of us with a lot of gray hair kind of know it, I think most contemporary gamers won't know it at all. And the core thing to know is, of course, Gamma was built from the war game companies, primarily from Avalon Hill and SPI. And they created it because they wanted a neutral entity to run Origins, the first game convention. Gamma was the first Origins was run by Avalon Hill in Baltimore in 1975. That's why this was the 50th anniversary of Origins this year. In 1978, Avalon Hill and SPI created Origins, created Gamma, rather. The other thing to know about that is back in the early days of wargaming, in sort of a Coke versus Pepsi or DC versus Marvel or whatever kind of bitter long-term rivalry you want to use as your analogy, Avalon Hill and SBI did not get along. They didn't see eye to eye. They kind of didn't even agree about what the direction of wargaming should be. And so when they created Gamma, they very deliberately hobbled the organization as much as they possibly could to prevent it from making real decisions. And in addition, in the early days of Gamma, because they didn't trust one another, it was actually the role players who ended up running Gamma, because they didn't want Avalon Hill board members, they didn't want SBI board members, and so Chaosium and those early role-playing companies tended to be the officers.
Yep.
So Gamma kind of fumbled along in that way for a very long time. And over the course of time, it started taking on certain elements that made it look like a trade association. And I want to say about, 15 years ago or so, the first thing that happened, and really just as an economic matter, in order to increase the core membership, was that they included the retailers. And that, of course, added quite a few members. And for a lot of recent history, the retail division of Gamma has been the best organized, providing the most service to the member, the membership. The other thing that happened over the course of all of this, kind of starting with bitterness around TSR's ascent and the decline of importance of the wargaming part of the hobby, a lot of wargame companies just left Gamma, and you know, they handed it over to the role players, and they're like, you know, we're done, we're taking our ball, going home. Going to start our own conventions. So we had Avalon Con, which has morphed into WBC. And not only are we going to start our own conventions, we're going to start our own awards. So while the Origins Awards are war game awards that were created by a war game company to recognize war games, we dropped out and created the Charles S. Roberts Awards. So I don't think any of those things have been particularly healthy. I understand why a bunch of them happened, but there is a little bit of a immaturity to some of the ways that the wargaming sector of our hobby has reacted to the organization and the fact that they weren't getting to call the shots, or you know, however you want to characterize it. So that is a prelude to where we are now. About 6 years ago, maybe seven or eight now, I'd have to go back and check the date. Gamma decided that it was no longer going to just represent the game manufacturers plus the retailers. We were going to evolve into an organization that represented all sectors of the hobby. So basically, if you can make 10 cents in gaming at this stage, there is a membership group for you. So there's publishers, of course, and retailers, but also creators, which is to say designers and artists, as well as folks who run conventions and distributors and
Manufacturers,
right.
The actual factories and us weirdo media types.
And the media.
Bunch of kooks over there.
Right. Yeah. So everybody's in. There's still some issues with the categories and still some things that probably should be refined in that regard. But anyway, you know, it's that was the direction that Gamma decided to go in. And as part and parcel of that, Gamma also decided to try and step up its role as a trade association. And that has been coming in fits and starts, and it has not been perfect, but it is light years from where it used to be. At the low point of Gamma membership, when it looked like the whole organization might go under, we had a little over 800 members. Right now, there are over 1,700 members in many categories. The creators are actually the fastest growing category at the moment. And Gamma is doing several things for them. First of all, you can get your healthcare through Gamma for the first time, just like a regular traditional trade association. We are providing professional development training, both for retailers, for manufacturers, for creators. Training occurs both online in over, I think, nearly 200 seminars at Gamma Expo, and now is taking the form of white papers that people will be able to refer to from now on. In the committee that I chair in Gamma, the Education Committee, we just created a legal subcommittee comprised of lawyers who are working into intellectual property and periphery of gaming, you know, dealing with gaming contracts and that sort of thing. And they were created to help advise members and help members deal with their legal issues. We're in the process of creating an arbitration process for Gamma members so that when you have a contractual dispute between a creator and a publisher or publisher and a retailer, there is an arbitration process available for the Gamma membership. Like, all of this is real trade association stuff. All of this is real industry stuff, but it's a long time in coming. And I understand why anybody would ask the question, well, what does Gamma actually do? And if all you do is attend, you know, if you're a hobbyist and all you do is attend Origins, then that's all you're going to care about or know about. But the other thing I would say is that for a trade association, the annual dues right now are $300. That's probably the cheapest trade association membership you'll ever be offered. It's beginning to be real value for almost no money at the moment.
Yeah. And that $300 covers multiple people within your organization also.
Exactly. They can go to Origins or Expo and, you know, you get three badges for that. So it honestly pays for itself. I think, you know, they're having to right now, the one crazy thing is Asmodee and my little company I created to deal with my hobby royalties, we pay the same amount of money to be in Gamma, and that will eventually have to be addressed. But
in fairness, you probably have more money than Asmodee right now.
Well, I don't know anything to Swedes that I have to, you know, send $1 million checks to or something.
Yeah, I would say it's probably unless you owe, you know, the gross national product of a small Pacific Island nation, you're probably ahead of where Asmodee is at the moment. Gary, I know, you know, Jason could probably keep going for another couple of minutes on other stuff Gamma does. One of the ones that I remember them doing fairly early on that at first I looked at it and I went, huh, that's weird. And then I thought, you know, that's actually a really useful thing if you're a business within Gamma. One of the early things they offered was they had a discount deal that they were able to negotiate with a national company that does background checks on employees, right? So when you're hiring people to work at your store or to work at your company, you could run a background check on them for way cheaper than you would just calling somebody up and saying, hey, I need a background check.
I could see where that's really valuable. I mean, you know, as a former game store owner, I was definitely looking to hire the most disreputable possible people. So if Gamma can help out with that, that'd be swell.
I'm pretty sure you already knew most of them. You were in game groups with them.
I was one of them. What are you talking about?
But
they do a lot of that sort of thing also. There's a company that works with Gamma that provides discounts for shipping. And I guess I don't know how this skipped my mind while I was giving this iteration, but the most immediate thing that had never been done by Gamma in its history before was to provide advocacy here in Washington, D.C. with Congress and tariffs. Of course, it has come to a shock to most nerds and geeks in our hobby that the federal government would ever notice them or affect their lives. But here they are. And we were able to bring a group of publishers and retailers to Washington. Of course, I'm already here, so I help organize the groups here. And we went and pounded the pavement, knocked on doors, met with Democrats and Republicans, and got a lot of good feedback. And it's a muscle, of course, that the gaming industry had never had even tried to flex before. But with 1,700 members and members in every state of the union, we're actually kind of uniquely and well organized to be an advocacy organization. And additionally, in the past, Gamma had been like the useless little stepbrother to the Toy Industry Association, which is, of course, more or less funded by Hasbro and Mattel, and they have lots of money and they're kind of a big deal. And so when they would organize letters or have some kind of effort, Gamma would sign on and they'd pat us on the head and send us on our way. This is just kind of inside baseball, Washington inside baseball. But during the previous Trump administration, when there were tariffs against China, the Toy Industry Association was able to go negotiate those tariffs and get an exemption for toys. And apparently their lobbying team, when these new tariffs came around, sort of assured the important membership of the Toy Industry Association that they would be able to work the same, you know, magic again. And of course, they were wrong. And, you know, if you're Hasbro and your whole lifeblood is sending plastic from China to the United States, this is kind of an existential thing. And so just by coincidence, when Gamma was up here on the Hill and we were doing our work, the Toy Industry Association was having a reception on the Hill. And we went over to see them and, you know, make nice with our colleagues. Everybody who worked there had been there for a couple of weeks, basically, because they had fired their entire lobbying team. And so the end result is that Gamma has been both active on the Hill. They've been lead plaintiffs in several lawsuits. We're also like uniquely disposed when it comes to being a plaintiff for the lawsuits, because almost all of these lawsuits on tariffs have the tariffs themselves are based on a national security basis. And it's a little bit hard to argue that, you know, the latest card game on cats and cucumbers has a national security impact. And so Gamma has been a really good standard bearer for some of those suits. And as a result, toy companies are coming to Gamma and are like, well, maybe we need to be more involved in Gamma than we are TIA. So that's like
not a bad 180 thing.
Degree role reversal.
Yeah. So Gary, that was about a 12 or 13, maybe 14 minute soliloquy on here's what Gamma does. Does that actually answer some questions for you?
Well, it's less about me, because I did know some of this stuff, not all of it. But I do think that a lot of, as Jason said, you know, hobbyists who show up at Origins or, you know, whatever, and who may patronize certain businesses that are Gamma members are not really clear as to what Gamma is doing and what functions they perform. And it is good to hear that they have started to become more active, both politically and in terms of providing services to the membership. I would wonder what measures, if any, have been taken to mitigate the initial sort of setup of Gamma to sort of paralyze the organization by the way it's run.
So one of the worst things is that they made it very difficult to change the bylaws. That is the main hobble. So now they undertook a major bylaw revision when they decided to add these new membership categories, but I wasn't a participant then. But I absolutely would have told them, well, the first thing that you should do if you're revising the bylaws is change what we have to do to amend the bylaws. That another revision of the bylaws is underway. The bylaws will have to be changed to accommodate Gamma's new membership because legally those things all have to square together. And so that's going to take some time, though legally speaking, it's probably going to be a year-long process. At the end of that, I'm sure the bylaws will change, and hopefully in that same group of proposals will be a change for making it a little easier to make adjustments and changes to how the organization itself works.
That's good too.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, as the sort of hobby gaming, if we're going to call it that, main advocacy group, you know, it would be nice to support Gamma, right? I mean, it's good to hear that they're doing things for the members. And I think these are things that in large part folks don't know about. And I think that's good. But I still see substantial opportunity for improvement.
Well,
but some of that's outreach too, right?
Sure. I mean, you know, how do we get the website's kind of a mess. They're working on it. You know, there's obviously they have gone out for bids for a huge contract to try and make the Gamma website a place that you want to go and a place where you'll find the information you're looking for. Right now, you know, it's neither of those two things. And
a place where you post press releases about major activities within the organization before those things are published by the hobby games press.
Yeah, that would be nice.
And Board Game Wire and ICV2.
Right. Like, that would be very nice.
Stacy's leaving. You know, it would be nice that Gamma make that announcement to the public before the media outlets make that announcement to the public.
Yeah.
Crazy me.
I think we all can recall too the hubbub surrounding Origins during the pandemic year when they tried to run an online event and it completely fell apart in like the month or something like that before the event. At that time, as sort of Gamma's most widely recognized activity is running Origins. Boy, that still feels like kind of a big black eye that Gamma is probably going to take some amount of time to get over.
I personally agree. I don't. I think the reason for the cancellation was political and not functional. And I think several mistakes were made. I don't actually blame John Stacy or the organization itself for that. I think members of the board of directors were very politically timid in the face of criticism that they were getting from certain quarters.
I can't argue with any of that, but you know more about it, whether you were involved at the time or not. You will still know more about what went on than I do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I heard, I was like you again, like almost all of my Gamma experience was me rolling my eyes and being like, why can't these guys get their act together? And then when I delved into the details of that particular decision, I'm like, oh, well, I see why this happened. I think it was a mistake. Think you guys overreacted, but I get why.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of the things that Gamma has to offer a publisher, a retailer, a creator, a distributor, whoever, you went through a whole bunch of those trade show things that they do that are sort of things that allow you to improve your business, whether that's learn a better way to make some money, learn a better way to build a widget, learn a better way to run a legal contract, you know, some political advocacy for the economic interests of the people in the trade organization, whatever it may be. You noted that historically kind of the Wargamer said, screw it, we're out of here because the RPG guys kind of took over the board and some of the execution of things. Obviously, we've been fighting to try and get the Wargamers back to something like Origins or the Expo to put Wargaming a little better back into the hobby consciousness of, hey, we're here and we're trying to be a part of the greater hobby. We want to bring people into our corner of it. We've got ideas that maybe y'all can run with a little bit. And there still seems to be some significant resistance on the part of the Wargamers to even show up and engage. And as a result of that, like and we've said this in some of our Origins AARs, it's one thing for the Wargamers to say, ah, screw Gamma, they don't care about the Wargamers anyway. But if the Wargamers don't even show up, they make it very easy for Gamma to not care about them, right? I mean, it's why would Gamma give a shit about people that aren't in the building? And it's to the point where, and Jason can vouch for this a little bit from having seen it at Expo the last couple of years, like, it's weird that I am one of the standard bearers of Wargaming in the building at the time. Like, I shouldn't be, right? I'm a relatively small media outlet that runs a small convention and then a bunch of Wargame events at Origins. And somehow, like, I'm the dude that a bunch of people look at and go, well, what about the Wargamers? Like, I know, you know? I mean, I can go call some people, but I don't, somehow I'm the Lorax of Wargaming. I don't know how that happened. I shouldn't be. There's no reason I should be. But, like, I'm the dude that shows up. Jason, how do we get other people show up so I don't have to be this anymore?
Well, I mean, of course, I'm screaming at them myself, as you know. And, you know, we're making baby step progress. GMT sent Jason Carr, their lead developer, to Origins this year. And Jason Carr was actually able to bring two other people at Gamma or at GMT expense to Origins this year. It's not enough by itself, but, you know, when I first broached this subject several years ago with GMT, they were like, go pound sand, we hate Gamma, and all of this. Most of GMT's attitudes towards Gamma and Origins stem from events with people who are dead or gone out of, you know, haven't been part of Gamma for 20 years, but these old wounds seem very, very precarious and difficult to heal. From my vantage point, the issue is that our section of the hobby has to have a public face somewhere. And our tendency has been constantly to look inward and form our own little conventions, which is not the right approach in the long run for the health of the companies involved, for the health of our hobby. And in addition, we're doing some extraordinarily neat stuff. As far as I'm concerned, most of the innovation in the gaming hobby right now is in our weird little corner of it. And it's a shame that we are not highlighting it to the broader gaming community, because I'm very confident we'd be winning converts with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it, look, this is something that I've joked about over the years, too, is that GMT was doing P500 crowdfunding when Kickstarter's founders were in middle school. Like, this is not like the Wargamers have innovated for a long time and have led the way for quite a while. And I think there's definitely a lack of historical awareness and knowledge of this amongst the broader Gamma membership. But at times it feels like even among the Gamma leadership, which gets to be kind of frustrating.
Well, it is annoying. While I was on the board, I had a fellow board member who I won't state their name, but a fellow board member who was like ridiculing war game graphics with kind of a hackneyed understanding of what those were and what those look like. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, I've seen your games. They're not too impressive either, but I didn't get into it. and in the interim, you know, we're Red Dust Rebellion was nominated for a graphical presentation award at the Origins Awards this year. Things are changing, and sometimes we're getting recognition, honestly, but it's not going to come without any participation for the major wargaming companies in the United States. We can't expect very much if GMT is not at the table, Compass isn't at the table, Worthington is not at the table. Like, I heard recently that Columbia Games is coming back, which is nice because I always like those guys.
You're welcome.
Good work. Yeah, so I'll be happy to see them there. It's kind of dumb that we're leaving this void.
I think at least all three of us could probably agree on the point that regardless of, whatever things Gamma has done possibly incorrectly in the past, and whatever mixed messaging they may be sending now, it is not 1985 anymore, and we have to work within the hobby space and hobby industry and hobby economy that we have in 2025. And I think Gamma needs to be a big part of that, and disengagement from that, from the larger ecosystem in which we as wargamers are participants, whether we would like to acknowledge it or not, is a bad strategy.
I totally agree. But I'm also just... You know, we're all history nerds here. This is our convention. This is our organization. Like, let's step up a little bit. And, you know, we're never, most of the war game companies, you know, Gen Con is going to be a bridge too far. It's too expensive. We won't get attention. We can't afford the space. But we can afford Origins. There's no reason on earth that our companies can't participate there and have a major presence, but they're not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and part of it, I think, comes back to a little bit of the bang for your buck in being at Origins. And this is something, so when Origins did that weird 2021 October Origins, we actually had a podcast episode that we were able to record right after Origins, which is unusual because normally we're in our season hiatus there. And Kevin joined us on the call, and we had the conversation. It's a point that I've made elsewhere before that I'm not, as much as I want the war game companies back at Origins to help support the things we're doing, but also to help them get better visibility into, you know, in front of other potential customers, I am always hesitant about spending other people's money, right? It's very easy for me to say, well, yeah, you guys should sink, you know, $1,000 into a booth and $5,000 into the travel costs and shipping costs and everything to show up and sell a bunch of games. Like, it's very easy for me to spend somebody else's money and say, you should do this. But that's a recognition and an acknowledgement of the fact that this is a significant financial investment for a lot of companies that are, quite frankly, fairly small. But in an exhibit hall full of companies that are doing other kinds of games that are also very small. But that said, I really think Origins for a war game company, it's or really any game company, but I care about the wargamers, it's a 3-year process, right? The first year you're there and people go, oh, hey, cool, you're here. I didn't know you were going to be here. And it's a bit of a surprise. They're going to spend some money, but they weren't really looking for you. The next year they see you again and they go, oh, wow, cool, you're back. Hey, glad you're here. Let me pay a little more attention. Let me engage a little more. The third year they're looking for you. Hey, where are those guys? And I know this because I saw it with Bayonet Games back in the early 2000s. We were there for 3 years as Bayonet Games. And the first year, who the hell are these guys? We were across the aisle from MMP, who were giving us death stares the entire time. Like, who the fuck are these guys? What are they doing here selling worry? This is our convention. And I'm like, guys, I love your games. Quit being mad at me. It was the weirdest thing. The next year, like, folks were walking by, oh, cool, you're back. What do you got that's new? And then the third year, they were like, oh, there you are. Now I know where to find you. Like, they were looking for us. And then the fourth year, we didn't have a booth. We didn't have anything new to put out at that point. And so, you know, again, one of the reasons I am very hesitant about spending other people's money to show up for Origins is, like, I know what it takes to do that. And I wasn't very good at it. So I don't want to, like, necessarily tell everybody else, you should jump in and do this. But the reality is it is a 3-year process. But in those 3 years, you're going to establish yourself as a presence at a significant industry event where you've got exposure to a wide variety of customers that goes way beyond what you're going to get in any of those little wargaming cul-de-sac conventions that, look, we love a lot of those conventions because you can go and you can actually play a whole bunch of games as we're recording this fall assembly.
Or just one.
Yeah.
Or just one big one, right? Yeah.
Yeah. for Winterfest. Like, Fall Assembly's coming up. I'm going to actually get to play some games this weekend. Buckeye Game Fest, like, I'll GM a couple of things, but I actually get to play games at Buckeye Game Fest. Origins, I don't get to play shit, right? Unless I'm GMing something that an odd number of people register for. Like, I never play a damn game at Origins because I'm too busy, you know, running stuff there. And so those small conventions are great, but the big conventions are where you can actually make some money and get some exposure and get your name out and grow your audience. And that's a place where I would love to see folks engage more. And I think that could be a positive touch point towards better engagement with Gamma overall for the Wargamers. That's my two cents. I don't know what you think.
I couldn't agree more. And of course, I also agree sort of with your outlook that, you know, you can't expect miracles just because you attend once, and that you need to, like, build your presence. And that, I think, to be honest, you know, having worked as a lobbyist inside a trade association, been on the other side of a trade association as a member, the same is true of your engagement with any organization. Like, if you want Gamma to work for you, you have to, like, engage, and not engage once in a blue moon and make a demand and wonder why that's not happening. It has to be kind of consistent and ongoing. In addition, you know, a company like GMT, which is putting out as many titles a year as they do, there's absolutely no reason that, I mean, they probably have a release the same month of every Origins, or have had a release the same month as every Origins. They could always have been scheduling those releases alongside Origins to generate buzz, generate excitement amongst their fan base. And you and I both know Buckeye Game Fest is crawling with Wargamers. They used to all be at Origins. They aren't anymore. But I suspect if GMT and Compass and Columbia were there, they'd all be there. So I don't know. But yes, I think your prescription is correct.
I just want to point out that if the people who are selling D&D branded tea and coffee at Origins can, you know, succeed and come back year after year, then I strongly suspect a company like GMT or Compass or Multiman or Worthington or Columbia might in fact be successful. But also, participation in Origins, as we've seen, and as Brandt has been pulling his hair out for the last several years trying to get this organized, participation by publishers in Origins is not necessarily, and probably shouldn't be, limited to just having a booth in the vendor hall, right? Precisely. Run demos, right? I think we've had, we in the sense of Brandt and the rest of the people running events for the Dragoons have had I think a great deal of success running GMT stuff in particular at Origins, and some other companies too. I mean, this past year we had Columbia Games title on the table, which I ran and I thought went really well. And there were a lot of other publishers that got representation there too, usually with minimal support from the publishers. GMT not being in that category in this case, because they did send Jason out, and Jason did a lot, and Jason's people did a lot. So it's great to see that, but you know, it come back to Origins doesn't necessarily mean you got to buy a booth.
That's right. I mean, you should take baby steps. You should get ready. You should see what the convention is, what would be required. Don't, like, there's no point in wasting money. And in that sense, I endorse the approach that GMT is taking now, which is, you know, all right, we'll send Jason out. We'll have him feel it out. We'll grow it a little bit. We'll run some demos. But right now, the Dragoons and you guys are the best salesmen the one war game store at Origins has. Like, you, whatever you guys are demoing sells out.
That seems weird, but okay, sure.
Season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches is graciously supported by all of our Patreon members, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Miles R., James M., Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Fred and his dog, Joseph Knorr, Patrick Geraghty, Michael Sunborg, Stagger Wing, and Paul LaFontaine. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can support the Regiment of Strategy Gaming as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
to that point, when Jason Carr came out the first time 2 years ago, it was as much a recon trip as anything else, right? He was coming out to take a look at what was going on. We had him involved in like two things, very low key. One of them was a presentation at the War College, but it was, hey, show up and see, just come watch what we're doing, right? You're out some travel costs and hotel room. You're not out any other commitment for the event as a whole. You're out the travel costs and hotel room, and I could probably get you a badge if I absolutely had to. I didn't have to. He was able to take care of that. But we, you know, he saw what we were doing and went, holy cow, this is great. And then came back to do more. And this year, like you said, he brought another guy with him. We always have at least one table full of GMT stuff. So GMT had three full games of things that they were doing. And we ran, you know, wall-to-wall GMT stuff for 4.5 days. They have Enterprise over in the main exhibit hall selling GMT games. But we also had Ares there running a table of Ares stuff nonstop where they didn't have a booth over in the other room. And okay, fine. We're still going to run a bunch of Ares stuff. Fort Circle had two tables. I think you guys probably could have all fit everything on one, but Fort Circle had a table, didn't have a booth over in the exhibit hall. Catastrophe Games, same thing. We were able to support those folks. And one of the things that I've tried to tell the Wargamers over and over within the context of Origins specifically is you have a support system, right? A random small RPG company wants to show up at Origins. They may not have that support system because the guys running RPGs already have their hands full running a shit ton of other RPG stuff, right? I mean, take over half the hotel running RPG events. The Wargame HQ, we are not every wargame in the building, but if you want to engage with the Wargame HQ, we've got a support structure for you. We're going to organize events for you and make sure that they get on tables, and in the official program, we're going to make sure you get a chance to talk at the War College if that's something you want to do, to be able to have a direct line to customers with a protected block of time for you to have that conversation with potential customers. We're going to make sure that you're promoted as a part of all the things we're doing, and Lord knows we hype up tons of crap in the 2 months leading up to Origins. So you've got a support structure that I'm not sure a whole lot of other folks at Origins have, you know, unless you're part of one of the big publishers.
Well, you know what, even though there's even some really small publishers like those Arcanist people. It's an RPG. I know nothing about it. And they have had a huge footprint at Origins for years. And that is a... now we lost Brant. I had a tab crash. That's why I bailed for a second. Well, thank you. Thanks, Google.
You're always setting... You're setting trends, always.
So. Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
yeah, no, there he is.
Yeah, that was fun. That'll be an edit point.
It's not my internet. That's... posing it up. My computer is, but the internet's fine over here.
No, that wasn't an internet issue. That was my computer tab crash issue.
When I dumped, that was the same thing, actually. Yeah. Just Chrome took a dump.
I may just leave that in there and just, you know, put some funny sound effects behind it all.
I should just start using Firefox or something. I don't know.
Trying to save bandwidth is one of the reasons I got the camera off here, but the...
I'm on fiber now. I don't need to save bandwidth. I should turn my camera to 4K, actually.
I think my problem was less bandwidth and more Chrome. But yeah. In any event, Gary, you were expounding there.
Yeah, what was I expounding about exactly? Because we had a technical difficulty and I lost track of it. Oh, the Arcanist people. Yeah. I mean, this is a very small group of people. I don't know anything about their game at all. And they've had an enormous footprint with like a dozen or two dozen events every single year for like the last 10, 15 years. So if those people can, I have never seen that stuff sold in the dealer's room. Although Studio 2 may actually carry it. I believe that's the case now, but they've never like had their own booth or anything like that. So if they could succeed at Origins, they're obviously filling these events. So something's going on, and I don't know that they have any kind of edge that a wargame publisher that has stuff to demo and run wouldn't have, frankly. And as Jason said, I think there's a lot of innovation happening in the wargaming space right now, maybe more than in the RPG space.
You're of course 100% right. I mean, I walk by booths all the time from companies that are selling a fraction of what GMT or Encompass do every year. So now let's like,
and Don gets cleaned out every year.
Yeah,
that booth is stripped, buck naked by the end of Origins.
I help them. Gary and I help unpack their van for them every year because Don and Lynn are a little older and don't need to be schlepping that stuff around in 90 degree heat. But then I help them load the van back up because Gary's always out of town by then. I help them load the van back up at the end of it all.
Don't think that's an accident.
Less stuff than we unload.
I know you do. Last Origins, I made the mistake of trying to buy my stuff on Sunday, and I went back and I'm like, do you have no, like, they'd sold out of almost everything I was trying to grab. I bought something anyway just because, but I'm like,
this is why I buy everything before the dealer's room even opens on Thursday.
And to be honest, like, I love that Enterprise is there. I love those folks. They couldn't be sweeter. They're very kind, and they've always been super nice to me. So I but as you say, Brant, they're not exactly spring chickens, and it's not going to be too many more Origins before they're like, well, we're not doing this anymore. Or we can't do it. And then what the hell? Then where are we going to be without any flagship wargaming company participating? We shouldn't allow that to happen, and it would be, it's just kind of a waste.
Origins, yeah. Too, and I think maybe all the wargame publishers have maybe lost track of this, is I think like the premier sort of omni gaming, if you will, event of the year. I mean, Gen Con is as much a media event nowadays as it is anything else.
It's,
and it
the
is always
Comic Con of gaming.
Yeah. And it's always had a dominant role-playing presence. And Origins has a ton of role-playing, but we also have kind of a lot of war games. There's hundreds of people playing war games at Origins every year. I see them. I smell some of them. Yeah. They are there.
Yeah, exactly. And lots of war game adjacent stuff, and lots of people who could be enticed into a war game without any real arm wringing.
Or fooled, tricked into a war game where they don't realize what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I will point out, like, the origins that GMT actually came, the first time that Jason Carr actually came, was the year that Twilight Struggle was inducted into the Gamma Board Game Hall of Fame. And so to say that Gamma is completely ignoring us would be not true. They're kind of doing it in spite of us rather than as a matter of spite or whatever the hell is running around in folks' minds that they think is happening at Gamma.
They're just mean.
Yeah. They mean, they don't like us, blah, blah, blah. The role players are cool or some crazy ass notion of that nature.
So says someone who has never experienced a role-playing game in their lives.
Yes. Yes.
They watched an episode of Critical Role to get that that factoid.
There is, like, again, not to talk out of school and not to be critical or whatever, like, there, but for the, I'm right behind these guys, but most of the people who run wargaming companies are now, like, staring retirement dead in the face, and I understand full well. It's, they say expenses part of it, but the truth of the matter is most of these guys don't really want to go to any of the conventions. They did it all while they were in their 30s. Now that they're coming, now that they're in their late 60s and 70s, the idea of traveling to the Midwest and manning a booth is not too appealing. I got it.
They want to run their own convention that's 4 miles from their house, and they can go home every night and bring PB&Js for lunch.
Exactly. And that's what they're doing. And cool. But, you know,
to be fair, that's what I'm doing. So
that is true, but the crust's cut off and everything.
But there are workarounds, and as you pointed out, Brent, there is, for the wargaming community in particular, the Dragoons are providing such an enormous service, and even a small publisher can plug in a way that with a force multiplier that they couldn't do, you know, on their own. And not only that, you know, all of us who of goodwill would help them figure it out. If I plead with you, if you are a war game publisher listening to this and are like, oh, maybe we should think about Origins, contact us. We will make it happen and we'll make it smooth.
I'll send you to Brant if you reach out to me, just to be clear.
Which is fine, because you'd kind of need to anyway, since I'm the guy that puts the schedule together.
Right. You're the guy doing almost all the work.
But
you and McKenna, actually. I think McKenna's pulling about 60% of the work at this point at the actual convention.
Yeah, at the actual convention, McKenna's the one running the show. Jason, your point is absolutely valid. I would expand on it slightly with this, is in that if you're a gamer interested in some wargaming and the opportunity to try lots of different stuff, it is a great convention to come to, because again, like, we had 200 wargaming events in our area last year, that was 2 years ago. You know, we keep going up and up in the number of events, and that doesn't count War College stuff. We are increasing our footprint again this coming year. We may not be in one giant block. We may actually have to separate into two islands with an aisle through the middle, because we're going to be taking up that much space. And we're still adding additional folks that are interested in participating with us. So if you're a game player, or war game player interested in an opportunity to play and try a lot of different stuff, it's a great place to do that, again, with a good crowd. And come try it once. And like, if you decide it's not for you, if you decide that's just too big of a convention for you and you just don't need to be around that many people, like, I get it. I totally understand. You go back to your smaller game conventions and you know, fair play to you, but give it a try. Don't just immediately say no because, you know, that's not for me. Well, you don't know because you haven't been there. But if you are one of the players who does come, or you do, you know, you are thinking about coming, contact those publishers. Hey, are you coming? Are you getting involved in the Wargame HQ? Are you getting involved in the program that Dragoons are putting on? Or are you showing up at all? Like, are you going to have anyone there? Come on, come take a look, come see what we come. Because if you show up and you like it, okay, cool. Like, I'll still buy you a beer and let's hang out and chat afterwards. And, you know, tell me what it is you didn't like or didn't think was going to work for you, just so that I'm better informed on it all. But if you come out and you see you like it, you know, let's get engaged. Let's get involved.
I'm also going to point out that as a lot of people have observed, it is a big Origins is a big convention, right? I think they pulled something like 19,000 people this past year, but it tends to feel like a smaller convention than it is, a much smaller convention to a lot of people. Now, if you're just wandering around the dealer's room for 4 days, then maybe that isn't the experience you're going to have. But if you actually go and sit down with people and play games and talk to people and engage with the different things that are available at Origins, which is basically any kind of game with the possible exception of video games, you're going to probably talk to the same people a lot, right? I mean, my Columbus Wargaming group was pretty much people I met at Origins.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I totally agree on both of those fronts. I've been to conventions all over the world and all over the country of every size. And this is by far my favorite convention. It's the convention I always make time for in my schedule. Whether I have anything to do there or not, I will still be there. Just because for me, it has the right mix of new stuff, a crowd that's big enough, but not overwhelming. And I don't have to spend $200 on parking in Indianapolis, which is an absurdity that grates on my soul. And Columbus is kind of a nice town. As between Columbus, Springfield, Illinois, where I also live, and Indianapolis, I would take Columbus every single time. So, it's a welcoming crowd. You will get to know people. People are friendly enough. And because it's big enough, they can only be so cliquish, because you just have to interact with other people you don't know.
I do want to, while we've still got a couple minutes left, shift away from Origins slightly, because again, that's the primary public facing window through which many people see Gamma.
Right.
But for war game companies and publishers and you know, designers, developers, artists, whatever, Gamma Expo probably has something to offer these folks as well. And I, Gary, I know this is the part where you're, you know, eyes are going to kind of glaze over and you go back to playing solitaire or whatever. but this is something that, you know, Jason has seen and been a part of a bunch, especially like, you know, helping man the Fort Circle booth in the exhibit hall there. It's a very different exhibit hall than you will see at Origins. At Origins, there's stacks of games that are going 10 deep, and like, here's your retail cost, you know, buy your game and off you go. Whereas Gamma Expo, there's like one or two of everything on the shelf in the booth, but they're also open that you can open them up and paw through them and look at them. And the pricing sheets aren't for retail units. They're for cases of units, you know, with free shipping with a $500 order kind of thing that you're just not going to deal with retailers. Booths have couches in them so you can sit down and have a conversation with the publisher, which kind of blew my mind the first time I saw it at Expo. I was like, what the hell do you need a couch in the booth for? And then I realized, that's why. That makes sense.
That one up, I don't even remember who this is. The one booth at Origins has sofas, which is freaking brilliant.
Yeah, there's a couple of them, but not like you have at Expo. So Jason, if I'm a war game publisher, you know, again, I still ascribe to my 3-year rule of the first year people, you're a novelty. The second year people are happy to see you again, but not necessarily expecting it. And by the third year, they're expecting you to be there. But what are the kinds of things that publishers may see or be able to take advantage of something like Expo? And then what may be some of those pitfalls? Because I don't want us to just come across like a Gamma infomercial here, but I do think there are some positives for folks.
Nobody else is doing it for them. We might as well.
Well, there's that. but you speak from the publisher side, like you've been on that side of the table. You know, what does Expo do for you as a publisher?
So Expo is, of course, a trade show. It's not a game fair. It's not a convention aimed at the public. It is a way for, I mean, the primary nexus of it is publishers showing their upcoming games or existing line to retailers so that retailers can, you know, you can try and help entice retailers to carry your games. That involves, of course, a showroom where all of the vendors of various products, but primarily game publishers and dice folks and that sort of thing, have their wares out and sell sheets and provide usually some discount to publisher or to retailers who will hire order rather at the show. And but it also, if you're a publisher, it's the one place where you can actually physically find distributors so that you can talk to them about carrying your wares and distributing them. And not only will you find American distributors, which is difficult enough, you will also be able to meet the distributors from England and Australia and France and Germany. Not this last Expo, but the year before, Fort Circle found found an English distributor for Votes for Women and Shores of Tripoli. That was, you know, probably a $20,000 connection that we would never have made had we not been at Expo, because we wouldn't even know where to find these damn people. On top of all of that, the buyers from Barnes & Noble, the buyers from Target are also roaming the halls looking for their picks for Christmas and talking to publishers about, you know, what could we do to get your game in our stores? And a lot of this isn't necessarily a war game company's dream anymore, but for a lot of publishers, that would be an enormous an important conversation that, again, they really have a hard time doing on their own by sending an email into some sort of corporate void.
That's actually a good question to ask. What kind of international representation does the Gamma membership and leadership have? Is it overwhelmingly U.S.-centered? Sounds like maybe it isn't.
It is. The Gamma leadership is, well, it's overwhelmingly U.S.-centered in the sense that I think of the 8 Gamma board members, one is from Europe. And the Gamma membership overall, I think, now includes people from 33 different countries. And there are a lot of European members, as you would expect. Asmodee is an important, well, it's the most important hobby publisher in the world. And of course, is an important force in Gamma. Gamma at one point in time was an all-American affair that didn't even worry about the rest of the world. Now it has a presence both at Essen, of course, in Germany, as well as UK Game Expo. They went out to meet with the game companies in Japan. So again, something that needs to be worked on more, but something that from where we were 10 years ago, there's been light years of progress.
That's good.
And, And some of the European publishers also show up at Expo. So it's an opportunity for, if you're running a war game store somewhere, it's an opportunity to engage with and talk to those guys. just this past year, I had two different conversations with the folks from Phalanx over, you know, one at the Media First Look night, where they have a night dedicated just for the media folks to get an advanced look at some stuff. But then also at the booth, you know, was able to sit down and have an extended conversation with them. And we ended up having, I think it was actually 2 years ago, had James Buckley, when he was still working for Phalanx, on the podcast that we recorded there. So it's an opportunity for, Loki battle mats are always there. They don't come to Origins because they've got to come from England. So they'll come over for Expo. They'll come over for Gen Con because they're a little more RPG focused. But they've always got some fantastic, cool stuff that they're showing off at Expo that I always end up, you know, going to my local game store and going, hey, order me one of these. The deck of many insults, it was so flipping hilarious. My son actually went and ordered his own copy of it so he'd quit stealing mine. It is one of the funniest RPG accessories you'll ever see. There's that, you get those kinds of publishers and that kind of engagement that you wouldn't get in, and even at a big convention, like their primary purpose there is moving product. And at something like Gamma Expo, they're more than happy to spend a little bit of time talking to you as a media person, because this gives them a venue where they can do that with less pressure to just sell.
Precisely. And it's the purpose is for business meetings. And to your point, at this stage, some of the larger European companies, both Asmodee and Devir's the primary publisher in the Spanish-speaking world, they kind of use Gamma Expo as a place where they have kind of a informal get-together of all of their national chapters. So obviously, Asmodee USA is there, but the French guys are there, the Polish guys are there, the Italian guys are there, and they can all conduct Asmodee business while they're also at Gamma Expo. The same thing for Devir with their national representatives there. They all come to Expo and they have their side meetings amongst themselves and then are conducting business with other companies.
Yeah, Ares Games had both of their U.S. folks there, but they also had several of the folks from over in Europe there. Obviously, Phalanx coming out of Poland, but there was a Czech company there that had a bunch of map and minis games on their exhibit table that all look pretty cool. The Warlord Games crowd, so again, you know, minis wargaming, but still wargaming, were there, and not just the U.S. reps, but they brought the guys over from England as well that actually run the company. They were there also. So there are some of those folks in the building that it's not just U.S. publishers. It's, you know, and it's the bigger U.S. publishers, but it's not just the U.S. publishers.
For sure. And I should say also at Expo, we, you know, one other thing that you can do if you're a U.S. publisher is find your foreign partner for localization. Like if you're a company like Fourth Circle, we're not really interested in publishing in Germany per se, maybe someday, but not now. It's too much of a hassle. But we will partner with a German company to make Votes for Women or whatever the hell available in Germany. We're able to meet those people at Expo without flying to Essen, which is another, you know, kind of Gen Con cattle call, but this time, you know, halfway across the world. So it's much, much easier to meet them at Gamma Expo than anywhere else. I should say that Gamma Expo in 2026 will be in Louisville, Kentucky for the last time. The convention grew so rapidly and has provided such a necessary service for the hobby. It's already needed to move venue again. And so it will be coming to Baltimore, where they have a much larger convention center. And, you know, without some small irony, it's where the hobby began. At a convention in Baltimore.
And a whole bunch of wargame publishers are right down in that area, too. How about that?
Don't think I haven't already yelled at least one of them about this.
Yeah, MFP is the obvious one. They're right there. They're 20 minutes from Baltimore.
Well, yeah, Scott was at the store this weekend when we were having our wargame day. We had this conversation, I promise.
They're not the only ones. I think OSG is in Virginia now, too. Are they not?
OSG recently relocated over toward the mountainous side of Virginia. They're a little ways up the road from Flying Pig. They are still in reasonably easy commuting distance, you know, an easy drive to spend a couple of days there, but they're not sleep at home close like the MMP guys would be. Yeah. So a couple of things with regards to Expo that are different than the hobby facing convention. It's during during the week. This is weekday convention. They actually started doing some things on Sunday, because kind of like Origins, where they had to start putting things on Wednesday because so many people were showing up the day before, and in milling around looking for stuff to do, they started.
You're welcome.
Yeah, they added some stuff on Sunday at Expo for the creatives especially. But then Monday through Thursday, it's a business day. It's a working day for folks. And then in the evenings, because look, you put 3,000 gamers in a room, a game's going to break out. In the evenings, they have these open game nights where a bunch of the publishers will be showing off their newer games and a chance for people to sit down and play. But you're also going to see a bunch of classics hit tables. There's always a fairly raucous munchkin game going on somewhere. So there's all kinds of stuff happening around those.
Brant's definition of classics differs from mine, of course.
I would be perfectly happy to see, an old school Hex Encounter game break out somewhere. But, you got to take what you can get. Munchkin's, over 20 years old at this point.
It's a little easier to get to the table than Case Blue.
Yes. And the learning curve's a little easier.
Yeah.
The other thing that you hadn't mentioned at all in terms of Expo, though, for the businesses, like, there's a lot of those professional development sessions that are happening there as well, where you can go just learn how to run your business better, learn how to, cut better contracts with your artists, or, better crowdfunding promotion strategies or whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that you can learn while you are at Expo in those different professional development sessions. I found a couple of them to be really helpful. I found one or two to be comically basic, and it sort of teach people this stuff. But
I can think of several wargaming companies who could use a very basic tutorial on marketing.
Well, yeah, or spelling, in some cases.
Customer service. We could go on and on.
Yes.
But yeah, Noah, and it's embarrassing I didn't mention that, because I chair the education committee, which is responsible for all that programming. But
I wasn't going to call you out on it. I was just trying to hang it up a little there.
The thing that we've been trying to institute is more quality control, so that we get better feedback about the seminars and who is presenting and who presents well. And in addition, last year for the first time, we basically were able to archive all of the presentations, so that when the new website rolls out, they'll be available for people to review at all times. And, you're just like, hey, how do I write a gaming contract better? Or what personnel policies do I need to be aware of when I open my new game store? Whatever, all of those things. But I have also, I have also gotten amazing feedback from professionals in other areas who attend other trade shows in other capacities, and are like, some of this programming is really top notch. And so this is stuff that we're providing for free. There is a track for every single Gamma group. So whether you're a game designer or a game publisher or a retailer or in the media or running conventions, there will be a track of programming specifically for your group. And so not only can you be wheeling and dealing, you can also be improving your professional development.
Yeah, and you can go to any of those different presentations.
Yeah.
With the one limited exception of the publisher premier presentations, which are the ones the publishers pay to have that room to be able to do stuff. Those are for publishers to talk to retailers, and the rest of y'all fuck off, right? I mean, it's like the media guys are not allowed in there. It's considered fairly gauche for another publisher to sit in on your publisher presentation. It's basically, everybody else go away. This is publishers talking to stores. I pulled it up because I went and looked. I knew I had a picture of the listing in the guide in one of my articles. My favorite session title of all time was from Reno a couple of years ago, and it was Game Publishing Project Management for Aloof Visionaries and the Easily Sidetracked. That is my favorite presentation title of all time right there.
That's a bit of a mouthful, but I would say well-targeted.
Yes. And it was Jeff Tidbull, who's a great dude, used to be on the Gamma board years ago, now runs Left Justified Studios up in Minneapolis, had worked for Atlas Games for a long time, worked for a bunch of other folks. Really friendly dude. Look, I do my day job is project management, right? I mean, I joke that my day job is calendar Tetris. It's just, other people get to move the pieces also, but it's not wrong. But it was interesting to see, this is game publishing project management, how much overlap there was between the stuff that Jeff is, trying to teach folks and what I do in my day job. It's it was amazing to see how much overlap there was. And it's like, you know, project management's project management, but if you don't know anything about it, it's good to have a primer. And that's exactly what Jeff provided folks. And so, and there's a couple of war game companies that could use it.
Well,
it's not just the war gamers. It's not fair to pick on the war gamers. It's everybody, right? Gaming is run by small businesses almost universally. If you've got five employees, you're a big damn company in our universe. And that doesn't matter whether you're a role player or a war gamer or even some of the small CCGs. It's the same story. And most people who get into it are into it because they were hobbyists first and then they had some money and they decided to burn it by opening a gaming business. Yes. And Gamma's job is to help them burn it a little more slowly by being competent at operating a business.
Let's go!
In all of this, because we're pretty much at time here, that again, I know Gary was joking a little bit about, you know, somebody's got to do it. We have come across as a bit of an infomercial for Gamma, and I understand that. But part of this was, I think there's some real value in the organization for the wargaming companies that would choose to be a part of it. I think there are things that if you actually avail yourself of the offerings provided through the organization, you're going to get some value out of it. You mentioned, Jason, even if all you do is redeem your membership for the free badges, not free, but the included badges with your membership to the Expo and Origins, at that point, you've covered the cost of the membership and exactly. Everything else is gravy. But I do think there's some real advantage to being there. But more importantly, I think, you know, Jason, you made the point like we started it. Right? This is our organization. The Wargamers are the reason Gamma exists. And right now, because of a refusal to engage, in some cases, a willful refusal to engage with Gamma, it's very easy for Gamma to keep the Wargamers at arm's length. And I find that frustrating to no end, but I think there's tremendous potential to increase your customer base, to increase your market share, to increase your overall visibility such that you could end up getting some better pitches. You could end up meeting some better artists and better writers and rulebook writers and project managers, find a new publisher printing press, manufacturing facility that may be able to have some advantages for you for speed to market or overall cost or quality or whatever. You do those things through engaging with the rest of the trade industry. And I think that's kind of where you do that.
I will point out that as much as I certainly, and maybe Brandt, have made fun of Gamma in the past, we kind of view Gamma as our crazy Uncle Larry. We still love him. But he has his foibles, as we know. And we'd like to see Gamma improve, but we also think that disengagement from the larger gaming ecosystem and limiting yourself to this silo at your 75-person convention out in the Kentucky Hills or whatever you got going on your own, it's just not a good strategy.
Yeah.
And in addition to all of this, and in addition to the frustration that Ardwolf expressed earlier that led him to the question, but also led to my engagement with Gamma in the first place, the one thing I will say for sure is that Gamma has been improving. It's been doing more. And you can't say with a straight face that Gamma 6 years ago is Gamma today. It has been improving. Now, I personally, over the long course of experience in life, have come to think that the only kind of improvement that actually lasts is incremental improvement. And so you got to have a degree of patience. But it's kind of getting there. And Gamma, the board, is much less a self-serving entity than it once had been, and much more of a hobby service group, people who are trying to both improve Gamma and improve the professionalism in the hobby overall. And that's what we needed to do.
I do want to just really quickly rewind slightly to Origins in this one quick note. The Wargame HQ put 600 butts in seats for games this past year. That's 600 players sitting at tables. Some of that, the same dude played in five different games. Yeah, we're counting that person five times, but 600 butts in seats pushing counters or figures around just in the Wargame HQ. Find me another Wargame convention in the U.S. with 200 events on the schedule and 600 butts in seats over the course of 4.5 days.
And that's just the Dragoons.
That's just the Dragoons.
Right? There's a decent, I mean, it, you know, you go down to the boardroom and there's not a million war games down there, but you'll find half a dozen.
Not none.
Yeah. And the diplomacy guys are there. They're mm-hmm. running all weekend. There are a ton of those. There are miniatures guys and they're an increasing presence again, the historical miniatures guys. And so, you know, if you took all that out of Origins and put it in another convention, it would be a pretty robust middle-sized convention on its own.
Yeah, it'd be Historicon with more board games.
Right, exactly.
which is kind of what's starting to happen to Historicon, actually, now that they've started to bring some board gamers back. But the point is, like, I don't know what the full attendance numbers are for something like Compass Expo or CSW. Or I mean, Winterfest is like 40 dudes. Buckeye Game Fest brings in around 400 or so. But in the War Room, we reliably have about 45 or 50 people playing there over the course of, you know, Wednesday through Saturday.
Consum Expo is usually about 300 people.
Yeah. So that's 300 people over the course of like 8 days, because they do run longer than Origins does. So CSW Expo might be the only place where you're going to get a higher concentration of wargamers putting butts in seats for a large number of events.
And only it's, maybe. But I totally agree. Well, WBC is big.
Yeah, we're bigger than SD Hist. Yeah.
It's way bigger than SD Hist.
Oh, yeah.
Way bigger.
Yeah, it's way bigger than either.
And the lighting's better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bigger than Compass Expo, and you're less likely to get COVID from Gary.
Compass Expo has, I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure Compass Expo has never drawn more than 200 people.
Yeah.
And that might be a very optimistic estimate. I think it's 125 is more typical from the ones I've been to.
Yeah. And again, this is not in any way to say that that's not cool. Like 150 people playing war games for a long weekend. That is awesome.
It's awesome.
We need that to happen more throughout the country.
Sure.
That's great. Love it. If you're a wargame company or a publisher looking for a target-rich environment, I got one for you, man. All you do is show up. Just be there. Just be there. Jason's there. Gary's there, but he's not going to GM with us next year.
I'm there. I've been there. Fort Circle
Jason's
is there.
Be there.
Like, hell, we're a tiny little company, and we're there, so what?
Yeah, yeah. And it is a chance to meet and sit down with those kinds of – because – again, Jason mentioned he's there and Kevin's there. Tim's running around. Alex Knight's been running around. We've had Tori show up a couple of times. We've got this year, Doc brought in Joe Yost,
mm-hmm.
part of the Decision Games crew.
That was awesome.
So Drew Worley's doing playtest sessions at Hellraisers of Kanawha County in our space. The guys from Song for War have been with us for like the last 4 or 5 years. So we've got the designers sitting at the tables. I mean, we had Herman Luttman running the games of Plum Island Horror this past year. So you're sitting down with the designers getting a chance to play and talk about these things. So it's not just that we've got publishers showing up to do stuff. If you're a game player, it's a chance to sit down with the designer, with the publisher. We had David Thompson teaching Battle of Britain 2 years ago, and he was teaching something else this past year, but he's teaching his own designs the whole time. So
David, to be fair, probably sends two or three of his various clones or android replicas to run those events for him.
So it's really the only thing that makes any damn sense. I don't know how that man is
the
so productive.
Energy of that guy. I don't know.
It's obscene.
I just don't get it.
And he is. He's one of the nicest dudes on the planet. But yeah, we get all these dudes show up and do stuff. So and this year we have Ron Halman.
I never met Herman Luttman before. He was at Origins this last year. I was super happy to make his acquaintance. Really nice guy also.
Guys, thank you all very much for being here. I appreciate it. Again, easy organization to make fun of, but a lot to offer if you sort of scratch the surface a little bit. And it's just a matter of you got to show up. And I would love for other people to be able to show up. I probably oversold it a little bit by, you know, hey, I'm the guy people look at for war game stuff, but it feels like it a lot of the time when folks are going, hey, Brant, what's up with the war? I mean, Jason, you and I even saw it this past year when, you know, we had to go hijack the live broadcast to talk about Roger McGowan. Like, nobody else had a clue what was, you know, that they'd lost an Origins Hall of Fame member. And you and I had to go, like, elbow our way onto the stage to talk about him. So,
I'm glad we did. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely a necessity. So Gary may have had another browser crash.
He's dead, John.
This is going to be the podcast of browser crashes here. I don't know if he's going to bother popping back in or not. But Jason, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and thank you for the work that you've been doing. Yeah. It's sort of unacknowledged on behalf of Gamma and for Wargaming at Origins in general.
Yeah, I feel a little bad because last time I had you on the podcast, I got you time with Steve Jackson. This time I only got you Gary. You
know? Yeah, I was super happy to be able to fanboy with Steve Jackson, but this I fanboying with Gary is a little bit of a letdown, but it was fun anyway.
Yeah. I needed somebody else in there so I wasn't so obviously fanboying over Steve that I had somebody else in there sharing that experience with me. So I'm glad you were able to do it. And we'll assume Gary said thanks and good night and something obnoxious on his way out the door.
Indeed.
So audience, we really appreciate you joining us. We're not quite halfway through the season, but we're getting close, and still got a couple of cool designer interviews coming up, some convention coverage where we're going to talk about ours, but also some of the other conventions going on. And then, you know, whatever holiday hilarity we end up with right at the end of the season. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of Mention and Dispatches.